Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. With Christmas behind us and New Year's ahead, this is the time of year that seems to me like the saddleback between two peaks. I hope you are savoring it as much as I am. And I've got a guest DJ, Bree, is with me today.
Hello. The first half of our show today was produced by Ken Lane, December 28th, 2018. Remember the shutdown of the national parks that year? Well, that topic is included, as well as a place to visit that is not in a national park. There's also an interesting recording of airline pilots. Here is Shutdowns and Date Shakes.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert here at the tail end of the dog. The dregs of 2018, this strange and wretched year. Please listen closely to the following information. Because of the government situation and the funding problems and the various scandals and the investigations and an increasing sense of unease and dread, certain facilities and areas of our natural monument will not be available during your visit unless you plan to stay here a long time. Or unless something happens to you and you wind up staying here a lot longer than you hoped. The visitor center is closed until further notice, as is anything with running water or a lock on the door. Administrative offices are closed, as are all the restrooms with flush toilets. All campground reservations are canceled, although you may find that volunteers at your particular campground are attempting to put people in their reserved campsites. Disagreements are to be expected, but violence has thus far been minimal and mostly under control. Unless, of course, your campsite happens to be one of those frequented by the rock climbers. You will need to visit one of our local gift shops on the highway if you want to buy stuffed toys, a bighorn sheep, and coyotes, and scorpions, and centipedes, and rattlesnakes, and tarantula hawks, or any branded park merchandise such as shot glasses, baseball caps, bumper stickers, first aid kits, baby wipes, bottle openers, hoodies, flip-flops, hair nets, pantyhose, protein bars, etc. As there is already no food or drink for sale within the natural monument, you are still on your own. Should you get hungry or thirsty, you are still on your own. Lonesome Triangle Natural Monument is a land of contrast. From the eerie and forsaken low desert to the mysterious and forlorn high desert. The high desert portion, however, is the most popular on social media. The Joshua Tree is a tall, grotesque yucca plant and a beloved symbol of our high desert bioregion. But as fierce as the Joshua tree looks, it is in fact quite delicate, barely attached to the ground by thin and shallow roots. Do not attempt to climb a Joshua tree. Do not hang a hammock from a Joshua tree. Do not back your two-wheel drive SUV, suburban utility vehicle, into a Joshua tree. try not to back into any people or wildlife or boulders or billboards or what have you. Just don't. Violators will be fined and imprisoned. And even if you're not caught by a ranger, you will be seen by the various menacing spirits and specters of this land, and haunted accordingly. Please pick up and pack out all of your trash, including beer bottle caps and marijuana pipes and hamburger wrappers and sleeping bags and small children. This is Park Information Radio for the Joshua Tree High Desert. Welcome to this natural wonderland where the fortunate visitor may encounter a variety of flora and fauna, including people from San Diego changing outfits in the middle of Boy Scout Trail to meet the requirements of their Instagram sponsorship agreements, and entire groups of people who have apparently never been outside a city in their lives and therefore think the middle of a public dirt road is a fine place to park their car or pitch a tent. Many visitors make the mistake of being afraid of rattlesnakes, which are mostly hibernating this time of year. Rather, visitors should be deeply afraid of local human residents. The most dangerous of home neither hibernate nor go to sleep at all. As all flush toilets are all locked up within the park, it is a felony to need to use the restroom during this federal government shutdown. Just hold it in, you'll be back home in modern civilization fairly soon, probably. During this now common interlude of long-term governmental and societal collapse, we encourage you to use this moment in time to show that you can behave like a reasonably responsible adult when allowed to wander around outside in the desert without somebody in a smoky bear hat holding your hand and telling you all the things that you are not allowed to do. In the inspirational words of Woodsy Owl, the great naturalist and founder of the American National Park System, give a hoot. Well, let's open up the Desert Oracle mailbag. This one is from Matt Gagnon. I might be getting to it late, but of course we make no warranty regarding timely answering of Christmas season letters, as I am not Santa Claus. Hope the holiday season is treating yours well. My wife and I have been talking about doing some light adventuring with our 3-year-old son over the holiday break, when St. Nick brings Southern California adults the gift of semi-manageable roadways. Our objective: maintain parental sanity and visit beautiful locales around Joshua Tree that are relatively easy to access. Any recommendations? I've never been to Big Rock and Landers, but it seems like low-hanging fruit to impress a spirited wildling whose primary interests include garbage trucks and flashlights. Well, first of all is Giant Rock. Big rocks are all over the place up here, so we call the very big rock Giant Rock. It's just a very big rock on the side of a dirt road, a landmark in the area, a place of some historical interest, but hardly the loveliest sight in the region. But if you go to the Integratron or to the Landers Brew Company or anything up there, Giant Rock is close by, and a piece of it fell off some years back, and there's some graffiti and junk here and there. I don't know what you would do there. Now and then I drive past it, and I guess I always think, well, there's Giant Rock. A 3-year-old could appreciate it as much as anybody. Now here's the thing with kids, which I learned like every person who winds up with kids. Until about age 8, when what little attention span they have is given over to a phone or a video game system, a human child needs very little to be happy. Although it should be noted that a human child also needs very little to be unhappy. And that way, they really aren't so different from human beings. If you've ever driven by a daycare or an elementary school, you may have noticed that the primary outdoor activity, besides beating each other with sticks and screaming for no reason, is to sit in a wooden box and play with the sand within. It is the height of fun. And after many years of taking my own small children to beautiful and scenic places in the desert and the forest and the mountains, it became apparent that they did not really care one way or another, as long as there was some sand on the ground. You could be standing at the Grand Canyon or Half Dome or the Eiffel Tower or the Statue of Liberty, and all the child wants to do is play in the dirt. Which is fine, it might be as good as it gets. I developed a theory that children can only see about 5 feet away, and I told a pediatrician about this once, and she just nodded and looked at her computer in that way they do when you've really introduced an interesting new idea. The good thing about the desert is that it is basically a very large sandbox. Wherever you go, there will be sand, especially by the roads and the houses, or anywhere mountain bikers and off-road dune buggies go. As those devices turn desert wilderness filled with plants and animals and plain old sand. The problem, because there's always a problem, is that the sand tends to be filled with red ants and bugs and centipedes, along with lots of nails and broken glass and shotgun shells and broken vaping devices, the fruits of our civilization. So you have to sort of pick your sand pile with care, or make the child wear boxing gloves or other protective gear. But everything is relatively easy to access out here, especially in the natural environment. Just walk or climb or crawl or whatever, and you'll be there. And here's something that might be useful. Maybe the only thing. With all the visitor centers closed for the national park, if you want to take yourself or your friends or a child to a visitor center experience, go to the High Desert Nature Museum in Yucca Valley. It's right there near the old closed-down Food for Less. There are lots of dead, stuffed wild animals to look at, bobcats and etc. And there are some activities. And best yet, right outside is a Yucca Valley park with a big playground. Slides and swings. Why don't they ever put playgrounds by National Park visitor centers?
No, they have no reason to launch any weather balloons. Roger. Sergeant Charles Edwards, Patrol Tower again. The Utah officer from Edwards has just confirmed this one. Over the field, he has seen this one. The captain at F1 has seen this one. I have seen it, and the Utah officer says it appears to be an aircraft to him. It does not appear so to me.
It appears to be an aircraft.
He says it appears to be an aircraft. Coast control has nothing on any aircraft. It's moving too slow to be an aircraft.
At altitude. The captain said that one, he doesn't seem to think it's about the aircraft either because of the light situation.
Yeah, but there's only two lights, a white and a red. I see no green. The UPOB officer saw this one. He thinks it's an airplane. I do not.
I don't either.
Captain Clark?
Yes.
Lieutenant Fitz, deputy here.
Yeah.
I see. What do you think of it?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first saw the thing, it was approaching the base from the north, and it looked like a fairly low altitude, probably 10,000 feet. And I got a good look at it with binoculars. It seemed to be pushing a little cloud in front of it. And I thought, well, first, you know, it looks like a routine beacon hitting a cloud.
Yeah.
And, but it just stayed right with it. And then it turned a little bit more westerly and gained a tremendous amount of altitude.
Lance?
Yeah, Roger.
This Sergeant Charles and control tower. Now, observation on that last one that reported all Edwards.
Right.
It is almost invisible now. With the naked eye.
Do you have any others visible around the area?
Yes, sir. I still have the original one. He has moved now to approximately 145 degrees.
I see.
And estimated 40 miles at very, very high now.
Hey, what's up, the plane?
Right, please, AST.
I understand you got some UPOB.
Roger.
What about Charlie?
Edwards, Victorville area.
Oh, I see. Well, I thought maybe they were closer to us.
No, probably not.
I got word you were using Vegas or something.
Roger, we've got Vegas on eliminate here.
Well, what information have you got on them?
Not very much, except they're flashing green, red, and white.
Ooh.
Or green, red, and blue or something.
How many is it supposed to be?
I don't know what the latest count is. It's getting pretty good.
Of course, around Edwards, you'll have to see most anything.
Yeah. So anyway, we're about to scramble a bird off on them, so if we could keep Vegas at that, we'd appreciate it much.
Okay.
Roger, Nick.
I'll check it in.
Echo Mike.
Now, Phoenix would like you to pass the tracks to them.
All right, sir. Me and Isaiah Velocity is all the ones we have recorded.
Yeah, just let them tell them Phoenix, because if we should crump for and they had to take the interceptor, they'd have the tracks.
Okay, sir, we'll have him switched in.
Roger.
Right.
Ready.
Because the California desert is mostly unsuitable for agriculture, there aren't a lot of foods associated with the place. But in the low desert, what we call the Colorado Desert, even though it's in southeastern California, the age-old American desperation to turn everything into a business operation expressed itself in the importation of Iraqi date palm trees to the desert around Palm Springs, California, which already had native California fan palms. but while our native palm tree does produce bunches of small fruit the size and color of blueberries, and while California tribes and all kinds of wildlife have long depended upon this food source, it's a lot different than those big, sweet Middle Eastern dates, like the ones that killed the Nazi monkey spy in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Los Angeles food writer, former LA Weekly food editor, and Smart Mouth podcast host Catherine Spires dropped by our office in Joshua Tree recently, where she told us all about the weird history of Iraqi date palms in the California desert. And she also told us about her favorite food of the low desert, the date shake. The strange roar you may hear in the background is traffic on Highway 62, which is why our regular Desert Oracle radio studio is located in a secure, undisclosed location far from the bumper-to-bumper holiday traffic.
The history of the date shake is sort of the history of American imperialism. The reason that there are date palms in the Coachella Valley is because in the 1880s and 1890s, the U.S. government sent botanists abroad all throughout the world to go see what was growing in other parts of the world, and in the newly expanded United States, where could they plant the seeds of those same plants? And so some botanists were bankrolled by the government, and what they found out is that date palms created delicious fruit, the date, and that it was the same environment as the Coachella Valley. So when they first came back, they brought seeds from the date palms, and those didn't take. And so they went back and they took cuttings from the date palms, and these things weighed something like 80 pounds, I believe. And they stashed them on a boat and they brought them back. And there were people who were looking for farming opportunities, of course, all over California, and we tend to think of the more verdant areas of California when we think of farming, but it turns out the date palms were just naturally suited to this area. And there were some, it started with small farmers coming out, and it was, you know, a luxury product, these dates. And they had all different kinds. We normally see medjool dates, but there were lots of different kinds imported from the Middle East at the time. As Palm Springs got a little bit bigger and they were, I'm assuming, thinking about other ways to make money for the town, and they hit on tourism, they really went all in on the Arabian Night idea. 1001 Arabian Nights and the veil dances and all this sort of thing. They had a date festival that had actors walking around in the sort of stereotypical Aladdin and Jasmine costumes. It was to increase tourism. It was the draw. It was like, you come here and you can eat dates and you can see how we grow them. Shields Date Farm, which still exists, created a video about date farming, and they very cannily called it the sex life of the date. There are boy trees and there are girl trees, and they have to be hand pollinated, the girl trees do. The reason that you see ladders up the trees, those are so that people can climb up the tree and pull what is basically the husk of manhood from the male trees. And it weighs about 10 pounds. And so they come down from the male trees with that, and then they go up the female trees and spritz the pollen directly onto where the fruit will be. This is kind of a dangerous activity, so you'll still see ladders tied to the palms, but usually the workers, the palmeros, are going up in more like a forklift contraption than just climbing up ladders. It was such a good marketing tool for a couple generations, really decades and decades. The art that was on boxes of California fruit was actually a marketing tool, a move to California. But you know, the high school's mascot is the Mighty Arab. The fruit still has that, the packaging has that same iconography on it, and clearly the high schoolers still call themselves the Mighty Arabs, which is strange and outdated. Some would say that the drawing of the mascot that they have is offensive. You know, the beauty pageant queen, I don't know how to pronounce it, Scheherazade?
When was the date shake developed?
Sometime in probably the early 1920s. I believe it is the Hadley Fruit Orchards, which is on the way in from Los Angeles to the desert. I think that they take credit for it in 1923, which means that probably a lot of people started doing it at the same time. That's how food inventions normally work.
And it takes refrigeration and electricity.
So yeah, absolutely.
Those developments had to come in.
Funny you should mention that, because the recipe actually always specifies very cold milk. And then some of them call for nutmeg, but oftentimes it's just the milk, the vanilla ice cream, and the dates. It's not always fresh dates. They figured out how to crystallize dates.
What is your favorite date shake? Is it Hadley's, or is there a fancier one you like?
My favorite one certainly isn't fancier, I don't think. I'm actually a little abashed about this one. But the Living Desert, which is the zoo at their little snack shack next to the goats that you can pet, they have a date shake that's just wonderful. It sounds so simple with just the three ingredients, but the thing about dates is that they actually do taste like chocolate and caramel. And I know I sound like a big hippie right now, like fruit is candy, but they really are wonderful.
Are you wondering what will be abandoned in the new year? Now that our great nation has shown it can just abandon its national parks and monuments and offices and duties and functions, what will be abandoned in the coming year? All the bridges and airports and subways and railroads and interstates and economic systems are already falling apart. So maybe we'll just abandon those things completely in 2019. Have you ever thought about doing a shutdown yourself? Like next time you get a propane bill or a car registration renewal, just write government shutdown on the envelope and throw it back in the mailbox, or just throw it away altogether. Everybody's tired of going through the motions. Maybe that's a good New Year's resolution. Closed due to shutdown. It's like one of those great old philosophical riddles. Why is it closed? Because of the shutdown. Why is it shut down? Because it is closed. One of the many things that children rarely understand is that when the chicken attempts to cross the road, the other side is not the other side of the road, but the hoped for, but as yet hypothetical, other side of death. The chicken, like some poorly written comic book character in a Disney movie, is existentially saying to its companions, "I'll see you on the other side." You've been listening to Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree, California, Fridays at 10 p.m. across the Mojave on KCDZ 107.7 FM. Hear it on the radio from Amboy to Sizix, available everywhere as a podcast and distributed worldwide by Public Radio Exchange, PRX. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for another year of musical soundscapes. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Happy New Year, hopefully. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
I've been to that date ranch, and I recommend it too.
And let's hope we don't have more shutdowns in the next 4 years. It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to the Desert Oracle Radio replay on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM. Our next episode was released by Ken Lane January 7th, 2022. It includes some music by Jason Boland and the Stranglers. Ken interviews Jason in this episode, titled "The Light Saw Me."
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Our cold desert, the ground still damp in a lot of places for a change. The days are noticeably a little bit longer now. In the 2 weeks since the solstice passed. Passed over once again, praise the Lord. A hymn of praise to Ra, when he riseth in the eastern part of heaven. What year is this? Well, we are in the new one now. The solar year. We are at the beginning of a new solar year, and do not worry, we will get to the lunar year next month. But the solar year began with the passing of the winter solstice, December 21. No astronomy app required, just notice that special day is an especially short one. And afterwards, the days get a little bit longer. Before long, all this rain we've had is going to turn into a beautiful bounty of ragweed, but other stuff too. Good stuff. Maybe we'll have a good crop of desert dandelions this spring. Dandelions for the sandy washes and the sandy shoulders of the back roads. And ragweed for the house flippers who scrape the lot. Wear gloves and a face mask when you're pulling ragweed. That's my pandemic advice for year 3 of the plague. Or year 4, if it's still COVID-19, which stands for 2019. Every era has hard times. Every generation faces plagues of disease, of war, of disaster, of overwhelming human nonsense. But there will be good things this year. Wildflowers, perhaps. A beautiful spring, one way or the other. And lots of reasons to find the quietest and least peopled part of the wilderness that you can get to, because you're going to need it. Maybe this is the year when you find out just how much you need it.
then up on Boot Hill. It was 4 feet tall, they say. So few are ever ready to be chosen. Someone rather jump and fear the fall.
Familiar with the Hornet spook light up near Joplin, Missouri?
I tried to see it when I had some shows in Illinois. I had time and I drove around trying to find a place to park. And for whatever reason, people kept coming out and like running me off.
Real weird.
There must have been, but there were people that were just kind of watching. Maybe they were, I don't know.
I fortunately got to go out there one time when it was about 3 or 4 in the morning. We were coming back from, I believe, Kansas City and heading down towards Tulsa or somewhere. So we came through at an odd hour, and we had Grant's sister that lives out that direction meet up with us, and they drove us out to it. And it's fascinating, like the monsters in the paper. Once people really can't explain things and they move on, I think several of us that aren't the "you'll get to that part of the math equation later" type people, you know, we will be constantly confused by our reality not matching up with what everybody else says. They can't figure out that the Marfa lights, you know.
Tell us what the experience was like when you were there, and you know, what you saw and how it appeared, etc.
It started off in the distance, way over the hill, and it was one of those things where Grant's really familiar with it, said he believed that was it. And it looks unremarkable at first, and you think, no, that's a street light, that's just a car, and you keep advancing towards it, and it gets brighter and brighter, it starts to move and dance, and it became illuminated by more of a red halo and a sparkle. And then one of the times when you clear the hill getting closer to it, it's just gone. We turn around and start heading back, and each time you think, it's just not going to be there. And now when you're leaving where you believe it was, you think, well, it can't be there now. There's just nothing here. And then sure enough, you get a couple of hills away and it looks like a train popped over the hill at us. And it changes a lot. So your experience with it, sometimes it'll be bright. Sometimes it'll move and dance. Sometimes it'll flicker and pulse. Sometimes it'll be more blue. To me, it had more of a reddish orange glow this night, and a bit of a dance back and forth to it, but it was bizarre, and it was there the whole time we drove towards it and disappeared, and then at the whole time we left it was there again. So
I need to try again. It was probably not the optimal time for whatever reason, who knows. I'll go back. The middle of the night is what I have to do next time. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. Joining me on the telephone is Jason Boland from Jason Boland and the Stragglers. Their new record, the widely acclaimed concept album, The Light Saw Me, was released this month, and they've been on the road playing live, including their debut at the Grand Ole Opry on Pearl Harbor Day, with a December 7th. Welcome to the program, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
I haven't seen you in the flesh since the studio in Los Angeles.
Yes, it's the infamous recording of the album. Our meeting out there was borderline cosmic, as we like to say. It was all the stars lined up, and we were happy you wanted to help us out with it.
Now, this new record, The Light Saw Me, is what it's called, written up and Spin. I saw it in Flood, Uncut. Uncut is the Record Fanatics magazine. Texas Monthly did a real nice feature. American Songwriter. Every area of music press seemed to recognize what you did here.
I think people were ready for something that is different than what everybody's releasing right now, which is streams, smaller albums, and less conceptual things. So I think, or less conceptual projects, it stands out a little bit. We got what we were going for, right down to when it worked out with you. I had told myself that I was putting off addressing the narrator that this album needed. It seemed like it was too late, but I always had just thought, well, we're probably just going to fly you in anyway, you know. This won't be a live jazz riff that we got to witness. And then for it to work out for you to be in town the next day, I told you it was about a project about the unifying concept of light and its transformative experience on people, their moment with destiny. And you came in and we let the music roll. That's all one take. It was wonderful. I wish you could have seen all the goosebumps in the engineering room when that music was jamming and you were doing your read. It was great.
Yeah, that was the way to do it. The narrative is the shared obsession we have in life now, Jason, and that's the illumination that occurs so often in the lives of interesting people, saints and inventors and prophets. And for a lot of them, it's literal. It's a beam or a flash of light. In the case of Philip K. Dick's visions, it was a beam of light that was full of information in the early 1970s. And it can have the ability to transform a person right then and there. After my own encounter on Highway 395 up in the Eastern Sierra, which was 20 years ago now, I started finding these incidents in unlikely places, in unlikely lives, including in the lives of songwriters and country musicians and folk singers, people who deal in mysterious stuff, the old things that keep reappearing in new guises. Merle Haggard is in a small plane flying over Point Conception with two or three people in the cabin. Point Conception is a mystical dividing line between Northern and Southern California, where the Chumash have done these ceremonies and rituals over the whirlpools where the cold and warm waters meet there for centuries. Haggard's plane cabin gets completely filled with light, full illumination, daylight. And they get on the radio. Do we have any traffic over us up here? No, it's all clear. It's all yours. Clear skies. And the thing is there with them for a while, pacing the plane. And then it just shuts off like a switch. And then Bob Dylan had one of those in his house in Malibu. around the time of his Christian conversion. He's already studying with this group of kind of hippie evangelicals. It would be very difficult to not equate that with Saul on the road to Damascus when he's Absolutely. Blinded by lights that come out of the sky. In the story that you put together here, you're adding a real interesting chapter to this. What sort of brought you into this?
When it plays out with what we're referencing with the type of conversions and the experience people have with light, I think a lot of times people have trouble squaring their beliefs with what they see, and having something that happens outside of the rigid dogma of a belief system you've been given somehow might free you into not feeling like you always have to follow this constant set of rules that's going to make you succeed or not succeed. And maybe that's what helps those folks along the path of truly pursuing their dreams a bit more fearlessly than some other people that are still chained up with whatever they've been told all their lives by a bunch of people that were trying to figure it out as they went as well. Within this album and our band, I think from the get-go, bands always talk about that blank album that we're going to do someday and fill in the blank there, being a concept album or a rock album if you're a country band, or vice versa, or some form of rock opera. Or when two or three songs started to tie together, namely The Light Saw Me and The Terrifying Nature. The Light Saw Me, the guitar riff just felt like a guy going fishing. And because of some certain radio shows and podcasts and John Keel books I was reading at the time, the fisherman saw a light in the sky, and the voice in Terrifying Nature started to talk about that person and their experience.
I heard you talking with Shooter Jennings, who produced the record, that the moon and the fishing thing just sort of like popped into your mind, and then that ended up being the introduction to this really wild story of someone being taken out in nature. I want to ask you if you've heard about a case. Have you heard about the Pascagoula abduction?
No, I have not.
Oh, you're going to love this. October 11, 1973. These two old boys, Charlie Hickson and Calvin Parker, are fishing on the Pascagoula River. Right outside the naval shipyards there, they see a blue light, and it comes in and it turns into a craft floating thing, and these two enormous lobster claw handed furry robots come out and levitate these guys into the thing and do all sorts of terrible things to them and drop them off afterwards in the mud. And they were fishing. I remember this because it broke on the news on my birthday. I was 8 years old in New Orleans, and it was all over the local news with these drawings of these things.
Furbots. So they were mechanical and biological.
God knows, but they were horrific. It was the scariest thing I ever saw, and the same newscasters that give you your hurricane and crime reports, which was all local news was, and inflation, I think that was the other story. Kind of the same thing as now, I guess.
The
great circle of media content. And I remember staring at that TV and watching my parents and my grandmother, who lived with us, just kind of going about their business and thinking, does anyone else see this?
Because do you not see the fur box?
They're right there.
We're going on inflation. Your inflation is probably caused
by these fur bots and government spending right outside the naval shipyard.
Yeah, trying to keep up because they got to be a threat. Consciousness and light years, they probably want some gas or something, That usually tends to get people riled up.
Yeah, they were the cause of the gas lines and the fuel crisis. Scared the hell out of me. I had nightmares about those things for a long time, and then they just faded off like so many local oddities do. And these old boys, they were not looking for any publicity. They went to the police station because they were scared to death 3 hours after it happened. And the cops, being cops, didn't believe them, turned on the tape recorder in the room, but didn't tell them, figuring they'll catch him in a lie and kick him out.
Sure.
And the conversation is just chilling, unable to make any sense of it. And then the cops go and release the stuff to the media without the guy's permission. And so it got out. Of course, after that, the guys are called drunks and dumb Southerners or whatever was the usual way to minimize the experience that these people had. They were fishing. It was one of the things when I was listening to The Light Saw Me and Ain't the Moon Shining Through the Trees, it just brought back that whole dread. I think for a lot of people who go out camping and spending time outside and have an interest in this kind of esoteric stuff, even though they're rooted in our regular world, our normal reality, there's something extremely wrong when you start seeing a light of moon brightness coming from where the moon isn't.
Sure.
And across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree. Maybe you're listening in or around Joshua Tree tonight on KCDZ FM or on KZMU in Moab, Castle Valley, or Valley 104.9 up in Twin Peaks country, or KFCF in Fresno.
Wherever you are listening, there's a coyote not too far away from you right now. You're in good company. And it was sure good to meet so many of you on the Desert Oracle Radio Tour. Nice to get out for a few weeks just before the door slammed shut again, and now it's time to get back to all these projects I cannot keep up with. The magazine that's nearly done but somehow never done, the weekly radio shows, Death and Taxes. This show is supported by listeners like you, as they say on the radio, and you can join the effort at patreon.com/Desert Oracle or go to desertoracle.com. Oh, and our paperback is out, Desert Oracle Volume 1 from Picador Books. And there's a Spanish language edition out now, too, from Melusina Editions in Spain. Oráculo del Desierto, available wherever you buy books. Thanks to Jason Boland from Jason Boland and the Stragglers for joining us to talk about weird stuff and his new album, The Light Saw Me. We'll put more of the conversation with Jason on the Patreon, by the way. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for the soundscapes tonight. And thanks to you for listening. Happy New Year if you want it. Keep your eyes open for critters on the road, please. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to KGVM and its supporters. And thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, the number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past shows are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. And finally, thank you to Bree, my guest DJ today.
Happy New Year, and enjoy the snow this week.
I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams.